Colleagues, it's 6:30, I know, and we scheduled to start, but members have just come out of the sitting, and some are just migrating from the sitting to the meeting. Can we give them a few more minutes, and then we will be good to go? Just a few moments. We crave your indulgence in that regard. Some are just still catching their breath as the thing is a long day. So we'll start shortly. And Advocate Mthibi, apologies for this to you and your team. We usually always start on time, but if you may just stay with us momentarily.
How short is short, Chair?
Who are those members, Chair?
Myself included.
Was the majority of members in the platform.
All right, Sistombi will give guidance. Few minutes.
No, Chair, I want to concur with you. I'm still in a shuttle to Acacia Park.
Okay, no. All right, we'll start. The stone will give an indication. All right, 1 second. All right, please. All right.
About the shuttle, those who are in shuttle will tell them what was happening.
Aye, 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 Honorable Sonia, don't be like that.
You are in the platform, Hadebe. What's the problem?
I'm in a shuttle to Acacia Park.
In a platform?
Yes, but there's noise on the background.
No, we don't hear it.
Because I've asked everyone to keep quiet.
Very good. Continue, Chairman.
On that very happy note of on that happy note of keeping quiet, we are good to go. All right, colleagues. Good evening, and thank you very much for your strength and resilience. I know that we really, really do a lot and work a lot, and it was a hectic morning. You had a 3-hour session, question session. And we are going to be getting a briefing tonight from the SIU on matters related to Genel and SAA. Of course, I am due to report to colleagues on the ESCOM related matters from this morning. I can confirm that I have had a discussion with Parliamentary Legal Services, our legal advisor, who has given guidance, and I think it's very strategic and it's very correct and advice that we can rely on to move forward. I will deal with that matter at the end so that we do not muddy the waters and draw the SIU now on matters which they had not ordinarily been scheduled for. But we have received guidance from Parliamentary Legal Services on how to proceed in implementing the resolution taken this morning. So I'd like to welcome you, colleagues, and welcome to Advocate TV and his team of UNICH with the Genel presentation, and then we will go to SAA. So without any further ado, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson of SCOPA and Honorable Members of SCOPA. We do appreciate the opportunity to present our investigation, the status thereof into Genel and into SAA. I'm joined in the meeting by Mrs. Tsebe. She is the lead investigator in both this investigation project. But she's also the provincial head of the Eastern Cape SIU office. I'm also joined by Mr. Leonard Lekgetho, who's the Chief National Investigating Officer overseeing these investigations. But I'm also joined by Dr. Wells, who's the Chief Legal Counsel. Should there be any need for any legal clarifications relating to these investigations, he's there to assist. Chair, without further ado, we're going to start off, as you indicate, with with Dinel investigation, and then just request Mr. Lekgetho, who would be flagging the presentation, to flag it, please. And then Honorable Chair, Mrs. Kasibe is going to proceed with the presentation. Thank you very much. Over to you, Zodwa.
Thank you. Thank you, Advocate Matibi. Good evening, the Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Zodwa Kasibe, already been introduced by the head. The first presentation was on... The first presentation will be on Dinel. Can you move the slide, Mr. Lekgetho? Okay, my presentation outline, Chair. I will take you through the introduction and the mandate of the SIU, the focus areas, the objectives of the investigation, key deliverables of the investigation, preliminary findings, outstanding work, and limitations and challenges. The reason we are so detailed in this presentation, Chair, is because this is the first presentation that we are doing, that we are presenting to SCOPA. Okay, next slide, sir. This investigation, Honorable Chair and Members, emanated from a complaint received by the SIU on or about October 2018. Some of the allegations emanated from the 2018-2019 audit findings. These are AG findings. Therefore, we motivated for a proclamation, and proclamation R32 of 2019 was published on the 5th of July 2019, authorizing the SIU to investigate certain allegations against Dinel. On the 8th of November 2019, proclamation R57 was published, extending the scope of investigation to include additional matters. The SIU is authorized to investigate serious malpractices or maladministration, which have taken place between 1st January 2015 and the date of the publication of the proclamation, which is the 8th of November 2019, or any matter that took place prior to 1st of January 2015 or after 8th of November, but which is connected or incidental, ancillary to the matters mentioned in the schedule, or involve the same persons or entities investigated under the authority of this proclamation. Next slide, sir. The matters that are listed in the schedule to the proclamation of the SIU, Honorable Chair, we are mandated to investigate the procurement of and contracting for IT security assessment services by Dinel, the procurement for services to develop a white paper, the procurement of or contracting for legal services, a specific firm in this instance, the procurement of or contracting for steel fabrication services and steel fabricated goods, the awarding of bursaries by Dinel to three bursary holders for pilot licenses. And we are also directed to investigate unlawful, irregular, or unapproved measures or practices in relation to the misappropriation of IP rights in Dinel's air-to-air missiles, standoff weapons, surface target missiles, air defense, and unmanned aerial vehicle systems. Next slide, sir. The key objectives of this investigation, we intend to review compliance with prescribed legislation in respect of the procurement process followed by Dinel, collect lawfully admissible evidence with a view to facilitate the institution of criminal and or disciplinary proceedings against complicit parties, collect lawfully admissible evidence to approach the court and set aside the contracts entered into between Dinel and service providers and suppliers, identify and quantify losses incurred by Dinel and to facilitate the recovery of the losses, to provide recommendations on improvements to systemic weaknesses identified. Next slide. Before then, I start with my presentation, Chair. We felt that it was necessary to start with the 2015 board appointments. During 2015, the former minister of the Department of Public Enterprises appointed a new board of directors, replacing the previous board. However, the appointment deviated from the normal processes that is followed when appointing board members for SOEs, including Daniel. This process is actually followed through the department's legal compliance unit. The list of what seemed to be proposed new Daniel board members was submitted by a certain Gupta associate to the minister's office. The proposed names differed from the list already submitted through the normal governance process, and it was the same list of names that was later presented to cabinet for approval. The cabinet approved the proposed list with the exception of two names on the list that was proposed by the Gupta associate. So the new board immediately started on the 25th of July and made a number of changes, including the removal of the chief executive officer, the group chief executive officer, Mr. Saloji at the time, and the former group chief financial officer, which was Mr. Fikile Mhlongo. Next slide. I will then refer to the appointment of the board when I talk to the slides that would follow. Now I move to the first allegation, the appointment of Telspace System. It was alleged that Daniel did not follow any formal procurement or competitive bidding process prior to the conclusion of Telspace contract. No purchase order was issued as required by Daniel's SCM policy, and no request for any deviation was submitted and approved by the SCM, the group SC executive within Daniel. It was also alleged that whilst Daniel is a key, is a national key point, they failed to involve the South African State Security Agency in the appointment of Telspace for security assessment. This was this contract was actually a very serious contract in the sense that they were going to test the vulnerability of the IT systems within Daniel to outside hacking and all of that. So for them to be able to do this, they had to hack the system. So at this point, we felt that maybe SSA should have been involved. Move to the next slide. Okay. So this type of assessment is called the red team penetration testing. So it tests the vulnerability of the NEL, the IT, the entire IT system to outside world and to any corrupt elements. So in this regard, our findings are the process to appoint Telspace was actually irregular in the sense that there was no tender advert. No procurement process followed whatsoever. It was a gentleman's agreement. There was a middleman, a certain gentleman who acted as a nodal point between Daniel and Telspace. As a result of an engagement letter that was entered into between this company and Daniel, Daniel made a 70% advance payment of 4.6 million. Before anything could be done. This was done just on the presentation of a report that would indicate that, you know, they've done the work. No report, but just a presentation. So SSA was not involved in this process, and the company was not vetted at all. The report is still outstanding. However, Telspace just presented the identified security threats to DNR. So after then that presentation, they started demanding the 30% that was outstanding. And then when DNR demanded some reports, then they lodged a civil claim against DNR, and that civil claim is pending in court. What we've then done, we interviewed both parties in trying to understand what really went down in this contract. And according to Telspace, they were trying to engage DNL through the middlemen, but they were not getting any joy. They do have the report that they presented, and they are still sitting with that critical evidence that they wanted to present to DNL. So they were willing to hand over everything, and through our intervention, they were also willing to circle and walk away from the civil claim. We advised DNL, we are actually advising them to settle with this company for the 1.9 million because they don't even have monies to pay the legal experts to fight the case on their behalf. So at this point, we are looking at this civil recovery that will arise from this settlement, that the 1.9 million that will arise from this settlement. We are also looking at the criminal referral. At this point in time, we have evidence against the former group CEO on PFMA contravention, and we are looking at gathering more evidence against all related parties. All employees that were implicated in this investigation, they left the employ of DNL, and we are currently pursuing criminal and civil recovery in terms of all the monies that were paid to this company for this contract. Next slide, sir. The next focus area is the appointment of Tulevex. This is the company that was appointed to develop a white paper. DNL at the time needed to unlock certain funding, and they had to do this through a white paper, a company that was going to suggest means to get funding. And then it was alleged that no formal procurement processes were followed by DNL prior to the conclusion of this contract. And next slide, sir. We investigated the matter, and this company was appointed to develop a white paper, and this process followed an approval of a deviation from the normal procurement process. So we, in essence, you know, there were no irregularities uncovered in terms of this appointment. During 2017, DNL experienced severe cash flow problems, and in order to pay salaries, they approached AMSCO to relax some of the risks of non-compliance guarantees to free up some credit banking facilities. There was an urgent need then for DNL to develop a white paper for a funding model. They sought an approval for a deviation from SCM processes, and this was approved by the supply chain executive. And then the approval was granted on the 13th of September 2017. And then from this process, three quotations from three companies, NGIDI, Business Advisory, Tulevex, LTD, and TLKM Consulting were requested. Tulevex was appointed based on price, and no irregularities were found. In essence, in this matter, DNL actually negotiated the cost because they were supposed to pay 6.5 million and then excluding VAT, and then they ended up paying 5.7 inclusive of VAT. So in this regard, there are no possible civil recoveries, no possible criminal referrals, and no disciplinaries in this instance. Can you move to the next one? Chairperson, now I will go back to the appointment of the panel board. There was a gentleman who was appointed during this period to be the chair of the board of Danel. And this gentleman, in his nomination form, the person who nominated him was the a gentleman who owned a firm of attorneys called Kampa Attorneys. So I'm linking that to this this investigation now. So the allegations in this regard, it is alleged that the former chairperson of the Danel board during 2016 and on a number of occasions thereafter appointed Kampa Attorneys Incorporated, a firm of attorneys, to render legal professional services to Danel without following proper procurement processes. This firm was not listed on Danel's database of service providers. And in addition, this firm was also not part of the existing panel of legal experts within Danel. So it is further alleged that some of the instructions were solely advancing the former chairperson's personal interest, as well as that of the Gupta family, in the legal defense of one entity, Firebridge, which owns a private passenger terminal at the OR Tambo International Airport in Johannesburg. These were the allegations that we received, Chairperson. I think from just first and foremost, we identified conflict of interest because it is clear that the chairperson of the former board of Danel at the time and the owner of this company, they were related. They were either friends because he was the person who nominated the chairperson to the position, and then he ended up benefiting from that, from his appointment. So our findings are that this process of procuring the services from this company were irregular. There was no tender process whatsoever. This company was just called to come and render services, and it was not on the panel of experts from a panel of legal experts within Danel. In addition to that, there was no contractual agreement signed between Danel and this company. The fees were negotiated outside the normal SCM process. Then the group CEO and the chairperson managed and directed the project at the time. So instructions will directly come from these people. And we also identified one other member who issued instructions to this firm, being the former CFO of Danel at the time, the group CFO of Danel at the time. Then Danel's legal department was not involved. They were only involved now in the administering of invoices received, but the person who would then confirm that the work has been done will be the group CEO. No records or instruction files are kept by Kampa Attorneys. They indicated that they returned everything to Danel, but there is no record, you know, the acknowledgement of receipt. And, you know, from a reasonable person, you would expect that a legal firm will do that as a minimum control measure. So the possible outcomes in this matter is we are referring the account of 10 million rand to the Legal Practice Council for taxation. We are looking at possible criminal referral from the GCEO of the former GCEO. In all these criminal referrals and disciplinaries, we aiming to finalize everything by end of March, which is the end of March this year. We are referring the Kampa attorneys to the Legal Practice Council because of then their conduct, and we're also looking at an administrative action thereafter from the Legal Practice Council. We are also looking at other criminal referrals, especially with regards to the relationship between the chairperson and the firm, as well as then the instructions that were issued by the former CFO. Next slide. Now I move to the appointment of VR Laser Services. VR Laser is one of the Gupta companies that was involved in the in Danel at the time. VR Laser is a company that specializes in steel fabrication and also steel fabricated structures and hulls. The allegations that we received was that the Danel commissioned the Ngidi Business Advisory to review the process that was followed by Danel in the conclusion of a memorandum of agreement that was entered into between itself, being Danel and VR Laser, on 19 May 2015. Then according to this report, VR Laser was appointed as a single source supplier to Danel Land Systems for all fabricated steel services and goods such as fabricated structures and hulls. The process was found to be fraught with irregularities, and accordingly the spending pursuant thereto constituted irregular expenditure. It was further alleged that some of the executives at Danel were conflicted. Next slide, sir. I would be talking about these people because this is also public knowledge. It has, this information has been shared, and there were people who testified and given this information at the Zondo Commission. Around February 2013, during an exhibition that was led by Danel at Abu Dhabi, the former business development executive, Mr. Zelakhen Jebe, introduced Mr. Salim Issa to the one of the shareholders of VR Laser at the time, Mr. Chian. The main purpose was the sale of VR Laser shares to Mr. Issa and his associates. The sale of the major shares of this property, and the property of VR Laser was were transferred to Igasov. Igasov is a company that is solely owned by Mr. Issa and was concluded in December 2013, and therefore Mr. Issa became the major shareholder of VRLS. VR Laser and Danel had a relationship prior to the takeover of the major shares by Mr. Issa. And in terms of then this business relationship, the contracts that were awarded to VR Laser, they were in the region between 3 and 13 million rand. So they never exceeded 13 million per annum. However, after the sale, the value of contracts awarded to VR Laser exponentially increased from 39 million in 2014 to an average of 75 million every year thereafter. Chairperson, allow me to pause at this stage and then refer back to the appointment of the board. The board was appointed, and the chairperson of the board immediately removed the former group CEO and the former group CFO, and replaced the former Jeep Group CEO by Mr. Zelakhen Jebe. And then therefore Mr. Jebe had always had this relationship with this with Mr. Salim Issa stemming from 2013. Let's move to the next slide. We projected this table and this graph just to depict the picture between 2009 and 2013, where VR Laser was still owned by the previous owners, and then from 2014 upwards to up to 2017, when the issue of the Gupta companies became public knowledge and all the contracts were cancelled, then you can see for yourself that the graph then moved from that 13 million to the average of 75 million rand. Next slide, please. Our preliminary findings. The Gupta company, Mr. Salim Issa, was very instrumental in persuading the company and its executive in getting most of the contracts to his company. During November 2014, the former Danel Group CEO, before Mr. Njepe, appointed the VR Laser for the manufacturing of different variants of hoof yester vehicles. This was an order that was made to Danel by AMSCO. This was despite the strategic requisition of LMT, a company now that was owned by Danel for specific manufacturing of these hoof yesters. LMT specialized in hoof yesters, but for some reason, VR Laser was then preferred to be the company to manufacture these vehicles. LMT was ignored. Over and above this, late 2014 and early 2015, two memorandum of agreements were concluded, appointing VR Laser as a single source supplier for DLS, this is Danel Land Systems, and Danel Vehicle Systems for steel fabrication and steel fabricated goods for a period of 10 years. This process was irregular. This was done by the group CEO at the time through authorizing the CEOs of DLS and DVS to sign a memorandum of agreements with the company named VR Laser. These two MOAs were approved by the then acting GCEO, even though the group supply chain executive had declined the recommendation of the DLS Exco to appoint VR Laser. All processes to appoint VR Laser were irregular. None of them followed the proper procurement processes. We identified that orders were split in order to meet the requirement, the SCM requirements, so that some of these approvals, they only end up with the group executive. They don't go to the corporate center. We also identified conflict of interest between some executives and the directors of VR Laser. VR Laser is currently under business rescue. I've got under civil recovery none, not because we are not pursuing anything at the moment. Our legals are currently busy formulating a legal strategy to recover some of the funds that were paid to VR Laser, and we are just waiting for that process at the moment. We are compiling criminal referrals against a number of people, including the former GCEO and the CEO of Danel Dynamics, CEO of Land Systems, as well as that of the DVS. The evidence of corruption is also under review. None of those implicated members in the process are still in the employ of Danel. However, we are seeking means of recovering some money from them and also looking at possible criminal referrals. Next slide, sir. Now we move to the awarding of bursaries by Danel. The allegation was that certain officials breached Danel's study scheme benefits policy or duty of care and or duty to always act in the best interest of Danel, in that during 2017, they played a role in the irregular awarding of bursaries to three individuals for their studies at a certain air school for sum of 800,793 and 1.1 million. Next slide, sir. I will then break these bursaries into individual beneficiaries. The first one was the awarding of bursaries by Danel to Mr. Orabile Mahumapelo. The bursary was awarded to Mr. Mahumapelo for his jet pilot program, and he signed a bursary agreement with the NEL on the 1st of February 2017 for 1.1 million. This is in breach of the NEL study scheme benefits policy. The NEL study scheme benefits policy is only limited to 100,000 per student, and it is part of a community outreach program. So Mr. Mahumapelo was issued with a termination letter in June 2018 after his exclusion from the 43S school, the pilot school that is located in the Eastern Cape, and therefore he failed to adhere to the bursary conditions. The bursary agreement, Chairperson, was drafted by Daniel. However, there were some missing paragraphs in the agreement, but those missing paragraphs, they did not exonerate the bursary holders from adhering to the bursary conditions. So at the time of his exclusion from the S school, Daniel had already paid 881,000 rand, and out of this amount, 559,000 had already been credited to his study program. There was a balance of 321 in his account, and therefore the balance was therefore credited to another bursary holder by the name of Mr. Sanele Ndlovu without the approval from Denel. So we are currently pursuing the process of recovering this amount from 43S school. In terms of outcomes in this regard, an AOD to the tune of 559 had already been signed by Mrs. Mahumapelo through her legal representative. Then we are looking at possible recovering 321 from the S school. There are no criminal referrals that we will be referring at the moment, because there is already a criminal case that is with the I think it was registered at Centurion. So what we've been sharing notes with the investigator, which is Superintendent Kumalo. The disciplinary referral, all officials that were implicated have left the employ of Denel. However, there is already a case, a civil claim, that has been lodged by Denel against those individuals in respect of all the bursaries that were awarded unlawfully to these students. The next slide. Then the bursary that was awarded to Mr. Mane. This is Sibulela Damane. This lady was already at the S school. But the difference between her contract and that of Mr. Mahumapelo is that her contract and the other bursary holder, their contracts were only signed in May. And this was after the media made noise about Mr. Mahumapelo's bursary. So this was awarded to Mr. Mane for integrated commercial pilot license. And therefore she signed her bursary agreement with Denel for an amount of 793, whilst she was already a student at 43S school. This was in breach again of Denel study scheme benefits policy. Mr. Mane was also issued with a termination letter on 2nd November 2017 after her exclusion from S school and therefore failed to adhere to bursary conditions. Denel had already paid 641,000 rand, and out of this amount, 234 had been credited to her study program. The balance of her amount that was paid by Denel was therefore credited to Mr. Sanele Ndlovu's account without any approval from Denel. The SIU is in the process of recovering this amount from the 43S school. What 43S school did, They wrote an email to Danelle, and they indicated that we are going to be taking some money from this account to that. Please respond by this date. If you don't, we'll consider your silence to mean yes. So that is not how contracts are managed, especially in this regard. So what we have done in this regard, we have served Mrs. Damane with a letter of demand, and she didn't respond, and we are now currently pursuing further. We are preparing summons to recover the 234 from her, and then we are going to look at recovering the 407,000 from the escrow. As already indicated, there's a criminal referral that's in Centurion, that's a criminal case that's already been investigated there. So we are just sharing notes with the police in this regard. Then the officials are already already left the Danelle, and we are again similar to the first one. We will monitor the civil claim against those officials by Danelle. Next slide. Unlike the two other bursary holders, Mr. Stanley Ndlovu was successful in his studies. He also was awarded a bursary for an integrated commercial pilot license, and he signed a bursary agreement on 15 May 2017 for 801. This was also in breach of the Danelle Study Scheme benefits policy. However, Mr. Ndlovu, as already alluded, completed his course. Danelle only paid 510,000 towards his study program, and the entire amount was credited to his study program because he was successful. The balance of the contract amount was taken from the credits of other bursary holders. And then what ESFUL did, took money from Mr. Mahumapelo and Mr. Mane, and thus credited that the entire amount to Mr. Ndlovu. There was an overpayment of 182,000 rand, and this was outside the contractual agreement with Danelle. We are looking at recovering the 182,000 rand from the ESFUL. Criminal referrals, same as already reported, and also then there's a civil claim against them, the officials of Danelle who were involved in this matter. That concludes the bursaries. Let's move. Now we move to the misappropriation of IP. The allegations are that IP belonging to the institution, being Danelle, was misappropriated in a cohesive criminal conduct to abate foreign state companies. This involves state companies like the Saudi Arabia Military Industries, the SEMI, and the second company is Bareji Dynamics, which is a state-owned company in the United Arab Emirates. Then this Bareji Dynamics had a joint venture with Danelle. Next slide. I will then deal with SEMI and then deal with Bareji Dynamics. Our investigation with regards to SEMI, our findings confirm that certain data packs that belongs to Danelle Dynamics were unlawfully downloaded from Danelle's server to other devices. These data packs are for Mkhonto, Ingwe, Makoba, Mizaos. The SEMI group, deal started by SEMI showing interest in certain missiles in South Africa, and they forwarded a business proposal to Danelle, and they listed then the missiles that they were interested in, which is Mkhonto, Ingwe, and Makoba. Then subsequent to that business proposal, a meeting was arranged between Danelle and SEMI, and it took place on the 19th of February. The same meeting then was aborted because the SEMI group refused to sign a non-disclosure agreement, which was a condition for any kind of business and information sharing for Danelle. So because they refused to sign the NDA, then the meeting could not take place, could not continue. So that was the end of the formal dealings between Danel and Sammy. However, subsequent to this meeting, an NDA that was signed by one Danel member who was not even authorized to sign on behalf of the company, then it was then started circulating, and then as a result of that NDA, information then was shared to the Sami. At a later stage, the CEO of Danel Dynamics then announced his resignation because he had been offered an opportunity of a lifetime. After doing this, an instruction was then given to junior members to download certain information. So, and then the information was downloaded. We'll just give high level information for the sake of confidentiality in this. Then the three former officials, including then the CEO of Danel Dynamics, resigned and joined the SAMI. They were all implicated in the process. At this stage, we have got none under civil recovery. This is simply because there's a project that we are currently embarking on. It's our office, the NPA, the Hawks, as well as FIC, where we are trying to retrieve all the information from the foreign companies and foreign institutions. So in terms of criminal referrals, there are 5 criminal referrals that are possible in this instance. And we intend to invoke extradition treaties and agreements to extradite the persons to face charges in the Republic. We at the moment are looking at one disciplinary referral because there's only one member who's currently at Danel at the moment. Let me pause this. Let's move to the next one, the Bareji. Bareji Dynamics, it's a company that's in joint venture with Danel. Danel is owning 49% of the shares, and Bareji Dynamics owns 51% in the joint venture. However, this company, Bareji, they later accorded their status to another company styled Helcon. And this was then done with the approval of the board of Bareji. Danel has always been part of the Bareji board. They were represented in that because of their shareholding. And what we have here is the P2 and P3 IP that are subject of the investigation. And this IP, our findings are that it was unlawfully transferred to Helcon, which is a company that succeeded Bareji in the JV. This was done under the disguise of a letter signed by the former member of Danel Dynamics, who was involved in the stealing of data packs for the SAMI. Another official at Danel signed off the board meetings of Bareji Dynamics board that authorizing the transfer of the P2 and P3 measles to Bareji. This member did this without the authority, the authorization from the board, as well as then the executives of Danel. We are looking at possible criminal referrals and similar to the one that we've reported the Supra, as well as one disciplinary against an official who's still at Danel at the moment. In terms of civil recovery, we are still working with FIC and all other institutions because we felt that there was a need for a multidisciplinary approach in this because this is a serious crime against the state. Can we move forward? I've already alluded to the involvement of this institution. We can move. We already have this multidisciplinary approach. Chairperson, I've got the Danel income statement here, and the purpose of this is just to indicate the financial performance of Danel from 2015 to 2020. This is by no means part of our investigation, but it's, you know, in terms of our mandate, we also have a responsibility to look at maladministration. So we are trying to connect and find the reasons for the collapse of this institution. And in that regard, we are looking at the causes of this, the collapse of NL. From 2015, Chairperson, there were a number of investors who, after the appointment of the new board, decided to pull out from Danel. And this actually required Danel to cough out in excess of 1.2 billion rand to pay these investors, because they wanted nothing to do with Danel. Danel has been issuing a commercial paper to investors, and from that date, there was no interest in Danel. And also, in addition to this, there was the Danel Asia transaction, which is not part of our investigation, which also contributed to the demise of Danel. And we are still investigating all of those causes, and we are in discussion with the minister and the department in this regard, whether to extend our scope to include some of those institutions. But if you can we go down? But if you look at the performance of Danel, it has declined from that year making minimum profits now to making huge losses. So the losses are just increasing every year, and there is, you know, at the moment, there's no indication of any improvement, unless therefore there's some kind of intervention if you're looking at it at face value. Let's go down. This is the financial position. Danel had assets that were really, you know, their financial position was good, but at the moment, the state is very bad, and it tells the story that the institution is technically insolvent. That's if you're looking at it at face value without considering other factors. I'm looking at this, and I'm saying this from an investor point of view, that if you look at this, the balance sheet and the financial position, it tells a story about Danel. These are things that we are currently looking at, because as part of our maladministration processes, and we are going to pronounce in the near future if we are extending our proclamation. Next slide and next slide. Can we move to the next? Then the outstanding activities, Chairperson, was most of the NERS executive and employees have left the employ. The SIU is obtaining and reviewing evidence to assess whether there are legal basis to consider criminal and civil proceeding to recover losses suffered by Danel during the period. Next slide. Chairperson, as you would know, we had some limitations, especially last year, due to the restrictions that were imposed by the lockdown and also the non-availability of personnel. All departments were working on skeleton staff, and therefore it was almost impossible at times to arrange certain meetings and also get documents with the speed that we required to get those documents. And also we have a challenge because there are no documents. This is because there's a high staff turnover at Danel. Members have left, and unfortunately most of them left unceremoniously. There was no handover, and this is based, I think it's more related to the current financial crisis that Danel is experiencing. Next slide. That concludes my presentation here on Danel. Thank you so much.
Oh. Hey.
kumathatha sehla ya ne right right colleagues are there any questions for clarity on that update by SIU and the now related matters?
Honorable Chair?
Bob.
Just a few points to pick up on before the honorable members. Yes. There's really just few because my colleague covered effectively all the points that we needed to cover. Just the last few slides where we're indicating just the financial position relating to other liquidity issues around DNEL and just the sustainability of DNEL. As my colleague indicated, we from time to time now need to really pick up and opine or even pronounce ourselves on the extent of the maladministration or the malpractice. And having observed that, and we will document it appropriately so that we are able to also, you know, when next time we present, we should say, you know, this is the ultimate determination of what our view is, what really led to DNEL going under, so to speak. Because there's, as we note in those slides, that you know, there's a serious requirement for an intervention. If that doesn't happen, it is our view that the sustainability of DNEL is at risk. But we will still document, you know, our observation around all those causes that that led to serious maladministration and malpractice. In terms of the intellectual property, that is, I mean, all of these findings are serious, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. the intellectual property is actually more so serious because it almost, you know, threatens the security, because now here we're sitting with the intellectual property which is now in the hands of a foreign company, simply because, you know, of the fraud or corruption that happened at the time. So we are going to quantify the value attached to this intellectual property, so that when we go into civil litigation process, we are able to say what is it that we are really seeking to claim, while the criminal process takes its course. And it is our view that we need to immediately invoke the mutual legal assistance so that these people who went now outside of the country, we can stop the process to extradite them to come and stand trial here in South Africa. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Appreciate it.
No, thank you very much, HOU, for that. I'm reminded of what Marcella says in Hamlet, something is rotten in the state of Denmark. I just feel that that is applicable here, really. All is not well in the state of Denel. It's just, all right. Honorable Van Minion will be first off the bat, and then Honorable Dulashe, and then Honorable Swartz. In that order, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. I've got a couple of questions here. I mean, firstly, I think that it's very obvious that there are a number of people and organizations that have essentially just looted DNEL for their own interests. And that is part of the problem. If I look at a lot of these investigations, Telspace, Comfort Attorneys, et cetera, all sorts of them, you know, what happens is they come along, there is some sort of agreement, certainly not a gentleman's agreement because it's simply a corrupt agreement. Then when the SIU has investigated, the officials have left, they can't get hold of them, they're no longer there, the money has been dissipated, and essentially people walk away with a large amount of money and funding from Denel, but there's no follow-up, nothing other than potentially criminal proceedings happen. So it's actually a very nice cash cow to have these agreements, then leave the organization and walk away with a self-imposed golden handshake, so to speak. What I want to know is the slide on the board appointments wasn't very clear. If we could just go through that again. Unfortunately, I didn't receive the documents prior to this. So I wasn't entirely sure what was being referred to. We could just go through that, I think it was the second or the third slide, quite clearly. Then on the Telspace matter, what is the time period that the SIU has followed in terms of the investigation? Because as I've expressed so many times before, what concerns me is people walk away with money, they resign, the money is dissipated, and then potentially there's a settlement. And if there is now a conversation about a settlement of 1.9 million, it means that the perpetrators have walked away with 4.7 million. And I always worry these settlements potentially have an impact on criminal investigations. So please like some reassurance on that. And then with Comfort Attorneys, what I'm concerned about is if Denel has now referred this for a taxation, they also admit they didn't give the instruction. The instruction was given by the previous group director regarding personal matters. But surely in allowing a taxation to go ahead, it will be a tacit acceptance of that instruction. So please just clarify that. Also, I mean, in terms of legal firms, they do have to retain documents for 5 years. So I'm interested in why that hasn't happened. And then with the other matters, I mean, as I said before, it's just this looting that seems to happen with absolutely no comeback because everybody leaves. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, Honorable. And I wouldn't say it's a gentleman's agreement. It was a looter's agreement. And just to safeguard the real gentlemen that are out there would not do this kind of thing. The Honorable Dolasha.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and everybody in the meeting. Good evening. Chair, once again, let's welcome the extensive report that has been tabled by SIU. For me, everything is clear on their findings as well as what they are going to implement going forward. However, Chair, under the tail space, I heard that everybody is being charged and there's a process that is being followed. But I don't hear anything about the chairperson of the board. Is he being, or is the person being deliberately ignored, although he was presiding over all this and even involved in the situation where he was not supposed to? I was trying to check in the whole report, especially the tail space. I don't hear anything that speaks against the chairperson or something that says why is he not charged. Is there any difficulty to make him to account like everybody else, as he was the chairperson of the time and he presided over everything else to an extent of negotiating? Like, he was the champion of looters. He championed the looting in Denel. The report is very clear. All I want to know is this about the chairperson in particular. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. Honorable Swartz? Honorable Swartz? Right.
Thank you, Chair, and good evening to everyone. Chair, my is just that the most companies involved in corruption at Denel are under business rescue. Is the ICU pursuing several matters against directors of such companies? And then two, it is also concerning that there are middlemen involved in state procurement, such as in the telespace contract. How many contracts involved middlemen? And how much was paid to the middleman for the telespace contract? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Honorable. But in fact, Mam Dolasha reminds me when she speaks about the chairperson. If I'm not mistaken, the chairperson of the board of Danel has resigned last week. So I think we'll have to follow that up. So Mam Dolasha, thanks for that, bringing that up, because there is the report to that effect. Right, Honorable Hadebe.
Thank you, Chair. I just finally got home. I've been in a shuttle all along, but I managed to capture the essence and some of the issues as highlighted in this presentation. Chair, you correct me if I'm wrong, because, like I said, I've been in a shuttle. So the report suggests that the board in the first place was appointed irregular. Is that the case, Chair? Chairperson?
Yes, that is the case. That is the case. That is the case.
All right, then. Okay, I'm raising this on the basis that the report further suggests that the investors disinvest immediately after the irregular elected board was appointed. Now, meaning the root cause of all the challenges associated with Danel started when the board was appointed irregular. Now, when we don't want a panado or a grandpa approach. When you have a headache, you're only given a grandpa. You don't address why you're sick. Perhaps you're not eating properly, so you need to change your diet so that from time to time you don't get a headache. From where I'm sitting, it means that the person that also needs to be held accountable is the one who appointed the board irregularly. Because had he not done such, all these challenges and all these investigations wouldn't have taken place. I want to ask the investigators whether or not they have pursued or they've made findings from the root cause of all these challenges, because you correctly pointed out that investors started disinvesting immediately after the appointment of this board, which was irregular in its nature, and everything else that followed speaks a volume in terms of the corruption. This report, Chair, it's depressing to say the least. I don't know why you chose a late evening to give us depressing news while we are tired from the sitting of Parliament. But in all fairness, Chair, I don't think the root cause and the person who initiated all this drastic disregard of the law should be left scot-free. So I'd like to get an understanding in terms of the scope and the mandate of the SIU, whether or not it extends to the source of origin, so that we are clear in terms of where should we move in terms of pursuing those that started this whole quagmire. Thank you, Chair.
But, well, I'm not the bearer of bad news. It's the SIU, not the budget. So, I'm not taking responsibility. Right, let's receive responses from the SIU, and then we'll move on to the presentation on SA.
Honorable Chair, I'll take some of the questions. And I'll just ask my colleague, Ms. Kasiwe, just to prepare to take some of those that require a response in terms from the actual investigation. Honorable Chair, let me start off with the question by Honorable Hadebe. I agree that the findings of the investigation do point that, you know, from the onset, and that is why we started in the investigation as a background with the appointment of this board and the process it followed and the manner in which it was almost, call it predetermined or determined, and didn't follow, you know, the normal process. So we have said that we will do in all other investigations, when we say we need to ensure that we hold everyone accountable at all levels, from the officials, executives, accounting authority, executive authority. So in this regard, Chair, so you, the Honorable Committee may probably also want to know that the investigation is ongoing and we are anticipating that we'll conclude it by the end of June. During that period, Honorable Khadebe, the investigation would have to pursue and determine the responsibility of, as Honorable Tolasha says, of the chairperson of the board and the board as a whole, as the accounting authority, and of course the executive authority that appointed the board without following the process. So we can assure the committee that the investigating team will definitely look at that. In terms of the question by Honorable Swart, it was indeed our concern as well that, you know, it really looks like companies that are experiencing problems or even facing investigations, and we have seen it in other areas like Eskom and so on, where companies, I want to say, just easily resort to this business rescue legal provision in the Companies Act. So for us and our legal, our chief legal counsel is in the room. If there's a need to unpack it more, he can do that. So we are not going to accept, like we have not, as an example, we have not accepted the business rescue submission in one of the companies at Eskom. We'll do the same here, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, just simply to show that we can go behind the reasons of saying we are now under business rescue, as though it's almost like creating a wall now for anybody not to, you know, dive deep into the reasons why you're going into business rescue, so that you can be held accountable. So we will do that. There's legal process that we will get underway through our legal team. The question of how much was paid to the middleman, Mr. Siva, perhaps if you can allude to that, please make a note of it. Honorable Tolasha, what about the chairperson? Yes, the chairperson, the board as a whole, we will determine their responsibility and accountability when all of this were happening. If there were various boards in various time periods, we will make sure that we determine that appropriately. Honorable Van Minen, again, I really agree and echo the same sentiment. In all of the investigations that we are doing, we're really experiencing this phenomenon, the phenomenon of people who are involved in wrongdoing. They would either have resigned already, or when they are faced with the investigation and the possible disciplinary action, they resign. So from a consequence management perspective, what we have been saying all along is that when you resign, of course, you terminate your employer and employee relationship, but we should not stop there, and that's what we are doing. But there's a bigger question to it, really, is that if we want to really dive deep into this phenomenon of people in employment and committing acts of corruption and irregularity with the view that, you know, whenever they are done with their corrupt acts and then they leave. So for me, it really goes deep into the organization or organizational management and the extent to which there are measures that are put in place in every organization to ensure that there's measures to mitigate. Because in some of the instances, Honorable Chair, we pronounce ourselves, for example, in the COVID-19 investigation, we've said in some instances, one individual would be responsible for all the processes end to end. If you find that kind of a phenomenon, it should immediately be a risk indicator that something is wrong here. So Honorable Van Meulen, I really would like to take that away so that, you know, as we recommend to the state institutions, and possibly we should also, you know, recommend to the auditors. You know, the questions are always asked when organizations go under. The question becomes, where were the auditors? Where were the risk managers? Because they are expected to be the ones that really, on a proactive basis, determine these risks and be able to give assurance to the boards and so on that the risks are mitigated. But for purposes of our investigation, the best we can do is that we determine what were their responsibilities and trace them wherever they are, so that we can take action against them, be it civil litigation or criminal action. It's really disheartening to know that, you know, there's this phenomenon of people committing acts and leaving, and then the legal process, of course, you know, taking its course. It almost seems like you know, it takes long, but at least in our environment, in our investigations, the special tribunal has helped us to move even quicker. So that, really, that's the best of how we can respond to that, and we'll have to make sure that as part of our recommendations, all of those come out in our report. The slide on board appointment, Honorable Van Meulen, I'll leave that to Mr. Stevens. Just for the Honorable Van Meulen, you can probably just with your permission, Chair, I'm sure you can really guide that. Honorable Van Meulen wanted to really understand around the board appointment. If you can do that, Mr. Sibe. And then the CAMPA attorney question around taxation, if you can please attend to those questions. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Avicho. Let's get the rest of your team to respond to the outstanding questions, and then we'll go to SEC.
Thank you, Chair. And to you, Chair, I will start with the question around the agreement that was signed, the Looters Agreement. Chairperson, we are following up on funds. It's not that we are leaving the funds unattended. I think in my slide, I did indicate at the bottom that we are looking at recoveries and criminal referrals. So for all these amounts and all these payments that were made, we are not just ignoring the issue of funds. We remember our core mandate is civil litigation, and we are looking at recovering the monies. But at the moment, our legals are trying to sift the evidence and ensure that we follow the right channels in terms of determining who's responsible for the payments. And on top of that, Chair, we are also intending declaring the contracts invalid. That's a process that we are following as well. So it's not like we are not following the money. It's just the 1.9 they are willing to settle on that one. The time period for our investigation, as Advocate Motibi has indicated, we intend finalizing the entire investigation by end of June this year, but we may finalize these matters before that time because Telspace is almost complete. We are just in the process of giving other parties the right of reply, and then we'll take the process forward. Then the instruction that was given by the chairperson of the board, as well as then the former GCEO to Kampa. Chairperson, that we are considering recovering that amount from the responsible people. It's not like we are leaving that issue unattended. We are really working around the clock to get the funds back to the net. Chairperson, I needed to clear something around the chairperson that we are talking about. The chairperson that resigned recently is not the chairperson that I'm talking about. The relevant chairperson at this relevant time was a certain Mr. Daniel Manja, who was at the helm of Daniel as the chairperson of the board during all those times. That's the chairperson that we are talking about. It's not the one that recently resigned from Daniel. And then we are not leaving the chairperson of the board. Everything that happened during that time, remember, we already alluded to the fact that we are looking at the maladministration in the process of handling all the affairs of the NEL. And that for that reason, therefore, we are looking at tying, especially the chairperson, because all these appointments that were irregular, he ratified them. So we cannot leave anything, any stone unturned. So we are just giving other parties a right of reply at the moment. And in some instances where we don't have documents, we go to the parties and see what they have. If they do have, most of them, they have responded and given us whatever documents that they had in their position. So in terms of the question regarding the company that's currently on business rescue, chairperson, that we are following up on the directors of that company. We are not going to just leave everything at that stage and say because it's under business rescue, we are not doing anything. Our legals have already indicated to us that we will be following up on the directors of the company. What else? How much was paid to the middleman? At the moment, there is no amount that we've identified having been paid to the middleman. We also looked at the payments and the accounts of the service provider Telspace, and we didn't find any payment that was made to the middleman. However, Telspace, the director of that company, had he's got about 79 other companies, and then we had to go through all those bank statements, and it was quite an exercise to go through each and every bank statement to identify any payments made to the middleman. But at this stage, we have not identified anything. Yes, I think the head has already responded to the appointment of the board. Yes, we can confirm that the appointment of the board was irregular under the circumstances. It did not follow the processes of the Department of the Public Enterprises. Then I think I covered all the questions, Chairperson.
All right, thank you, ma'am. Babusome, you had the question. Or are there other responses? Are we done with responses to the first set? All right, Babu Swami, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairman. And thanks to the SIU for the report. what has become clear is that even through their own comment, is that there is depth of mal administration, corruption, criminality within the institution, which tallies with what the Auditor General's findings are of the company per se, which is has put out the wheels of functionality of the entity in totality. There is a comment that the presenter has referred to on the scope limitation of their own investigation, something which gives some inkling that things might be even worse than they are presented, if the scope of investigation would have somewhat been extended to other areas. Are they prepared to make such kind of proposition so that in their own scope of work, they could unravel whatever nature of corruption, which has somewhat got into the core, the spine of that entity. If that is possible, looking into a number of things which are somewhat left behind, also if you could look into the entirety of that capital expenditure, and you look into matters of governance, and where I get comfort is as well the extent of the outlook in terms of the investigation, right through the performance and observation of the PFMA in totality, and that people could be found wanting just on their failure to observe the prescripts of PFMA and their own procurement processes. And in this institution, that is a bit endemic, and as such, it could assist overall to set that type of an example to ensure that those who are in the public domain would be 100% implementing the prescripts of the law as defined through the Public Finance Management Act. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Thank you much. Mr. Esther, let me respond to that. Esther, you?
Sorry, Chair. There is indeed an observation based on the investigation that there is maladministration and malpractices. There's also evidence pointing to corruption, particularly in the intellectual property theft and how it was really, you know, taken out of Denel. The question or the comment requiring a response in a form of a proposition, it is our view that it could be that a picture could be worse if our scope had widened and included other areas. And to that extent, my colleague, Mr. Siva, has indicated that we are engaging with the department. And that will enable us to then determine the areas that still need to be included in the investigation, and as by law we are required to then process the amendment to the proclamation. So, Honourable Somio, I would in principle agree and really say this proposition that yes, the picture is likely to look worse than it looks now, if we widen the scope and look at other areas of investigation. Thank you very much, Chair. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much, HOU. May we go to the presentation on South African Airways?
No, thank you, Chair. While the presentation is being loaded, Chair, I omitted to introduce one of our colleagues, Mr. Kaiser Khanyako. He's also part of the team from SIU. Chair, without further ado, again, my colleague, Mrs. Tasibe, is leading this investigation. Mr. Tasibe, thank you so much. I really would like to hand over to you without wasting any more time. Thanks.
Thank you, HOU. Thank you, Chairperson. Now we move to the SAA investigation. Our presentation outline, again, Chairperson, is going to be a very detailed presentation because this is the first time we're appearing before this committee. We're going to deal with the SAA-SIU secondment agreement, SIU mandate and focus areas, objectives of the investigation, key deliverables of the investigation, preliminary findings, outstanding work, limitations and challenges. Next slide, sir. Honorable Chair, there was a secondment agreement between SIU and SAA that was signed during 2019. And the purpose of this secondment agreement was for the SIU to assist SAA with capacity in its forensic investigation department and also to collect evidence for the motivation for a proclamation. The investigation revealed evidence of contravention of processes and possible acts of criminality by SAA staff and SAA service providers. A motivation for a proclamation was submitted to the Office of the President. Okay. During this period, the SIU reviewed 5 forensic investigation reports that were done by a number of forensic firms that were appointed by SAA Forensic Division. And we also looked at the annexures and evidence, and we confirmed a number of findings thereof. In respect of these matters, the evidence pointing to criminal activities was referred to the NPA, and then after we received our proclamation, which I'm going to be talking to right now, then we then appointed a senior counsel to just review evidence in respect of 5 matters in this space for civil litigation. The matters that were referred to the NPA chairperson, these are matters that were already in the State Capture Commission. So evidence in number of them was led in the State Capture inquiry. We are collaborating with the State Capture in a number of areas, and where necessary, we share notes. In terms of then the secondment potential outcomes, there was a contract for the ground power units. The finding in terms of this contract was that the sale was not executed in terms of SCM processes, which required that the SAA to convene a disposal committee. Then the SAAT, the SAT board, assigned to these functions, and they became a committee in itself. So this matter was referred to NPA, as already alluded to. What we are doing as SIU currently in terms of our current proclamation now, we've appointed the current the senior counsel, and he is reviewing evidence with a view to recover 241 million rand. There's a Palore investigation, Chair. this one was this contract, actually this appointment, resulted in an irregular extension of another contract. We identified conflict of interest between a senior employee of SAT, who was also appointed as a member of the CFST for the specific project. So that was a team that was dealing with this specific project. And his daughter was employed at this company. So he had a number of interaction with this company. So this matter is also in the NPA, and we are currently reviewing and quantifying values between the investigators and our senior counsel who has been appointed by the SIU. This also, we are trying to see if we can recover the money. The aircraft tire contract, Chair, this is the contract where there was, it was mainly, it was a true supplier development program where SAT and SAA, they didn't actually adhere to the procurement processes. What they would do, they will instruct a company to form partnership with a BEE company. And then in terms of this contract, there was an unethical relationship between AAR/JAM aviation directors and SAT employees. But this matter is also in the NPA. The testimony was given in the Zondo Commission. What we are responsible for now is then the civil litigation process. We are intending to set the contract aside and also recover whatever monies that were paid by SAT to this company. Next slide. Then the paint contract also is an irregular contract because the procurement process that was followed was irregular. SAT paid a service provider 54.7 million for a paint, which was more than double the budgeted amount over a period of 3 years. That service provider also changed the paint manufacturer's or product range shortly after being appointed as a craft paint supplier for 3 years. We that also has been handed over to the NPA, and they are dealing with the criminal aspect of the investigation. The SIU is reviewing evidence with a view to recover the 54.7 million rand that was paid to this company. That is just covering the secondment process and the period of our involvement within SAA. Next slide. Next slide, sir. Okay. Then I move to the SIU mandate and focus areas. Chairperson, on the 31st of January, which is last year, we received a proclamation R2 of 2020 directing us to investigate the procurement of and contracting for Airbus aircraft, maintenance, repair and operation services within South African Airways Technical Services, the legal services in terms of two specific procurement processes, where SAA was appointing a panel of legal experts, and we also investigating service providers that were appointed to expedite the implementation of SAA turnaround plan in terms of two procurement processes. The proclamation further mandated SIU to investigate maladministration in the affairs of SAA in relation to travel rebates, benefits, payment made to SAA vendors, and the implementation of that 30% broad-based Black Economic Empowerment supplier set-aside initiative in respect of the supply and delivery of jet fuel. Next slide. Key objectives of our investigation. Wanna review compliance with the prescribed legislation in respect of procurement processes. When I identified irregular and or unlawful conduct on the part of officials or third parties, when I identify and quantify losses incurred by SAA and facilitate the recovery of losses. And we also want to identify evidence pointing towards corruption. We want to collect lawfully admissible evidence to approach courts to set aside the contracts entered into between SAA and service providers. And we want to collect lawfully admissible evidence with a view to facilitate the institution of criminal and disciplinary proceedings against complicit parties. And also, we want to provide recommendations on the improvements. Next slide. Now, I want to move to the first contract. The allegation here, it focuses on the allegation that was received by the SIU that SAA entered into a purchase agreement with Airbus for the purchase of 15 and 38,000 US dollars, for which payment were delayed due to additional 5 aircraft. The delays caused some financial implications for the SAA. Then a further new A320 narrow body aircraft were leased. However, due to conduct of key people, the delivery was delayed by 4 months, and that had a negative financial impact on SAA. In this regard, Chairperson, we prioritize 6 contracts for investigation, and these are at various stages of completion. Next slide. Just as a background to Sale and Leaseback, Chair, on 6 September 2012, SAA Board approved 20 A320-200 aircraft sale and leaseback transaction to Bank of China Aviation, which we then call BOC. The BOC undertook to commit after the release of the 2011-2012 annual report. After considering the risk profile of SAA, the Bank of China Aviation took a decision to finance only 5 aircraft and not the full 20 as originally anticipated. This then forced SAA at the time into a bidding process and confined the bidding to the final bidders, which was then the Standard Chartered or Pembroke, the Bank of China Aviation, and also the Standard Bank, again for best and final offers. Then after these were presented to SAA, then the board decided to award the sale and leaseback of the first 10 aircraft to Pembroke. Whilst SAA made a profit on the sale of each aircraft because they sold, they paid 38.9 US dollars per aircraft from the Airbus, and then they sold the same for 41 million US dollars to Pembroke. So they made a profit on the sale of those. However, if you look at the total contract, they made a profit of 20.8 million for the sale. However, in terms of the lease, then they made a loss. Can we move to the next slide? In addition, SAA paid Airbus sum of $115 US for pre-delivery payment, including the postponement of delivery date in terms of the agreement that was signed on the 24th of January. When the sale and the leaseback deal was concluded, Pembroke had to reimburse SAA with this PDP, this pre-delivery payment. And at this point in time, SAA has not given us any proof that this payment had been provided, had been pro- provided by been made by Pembroke to SAA. So we are still awaiting that. Otherwise, if this was not made, if Pembroke didn't pay, that would mean a loss of about 1.7 billion to SAA. In terms of the lease contract, SAA paid monthly rental fees of $323 $0.5 per month for 12 years for each aircraft from the date of delivery, which makes a total value of one aircraft to now we're looking at, you know, for the entire lease period, it came to $46.5 million per the lease period. In terms of the agreement, then in terms of this agreement, the lease was a net lease. Maintenance and repairs were for the lessee responsibilities at their own expense. For all maintenance required, for each contract during the lease term, Pembroke was to pay back the maintenance money to SAA upon receiving maintenance receipt within 6 months. So they had to repair, this was an operating lease, even though this was an operating lease, but SAA had to kind of like accept risk and rewards in this regard and maintain its own aircraft, then submit the receipts to Pembroke within 6 months. Then in addition, the lessee was responsible for insurance at its own expense. There's no proof that Pembroke paid FAA for any of the maintenance that was done in this aircraft. The sale and leaseback disadvantaged FAA because at face value, FAA lost in excess of 356 million rand from this transaction. The SIU is awaiting proof of all payments, which is PDP and maintenance and repair costs from Pembroke in this regard. Next slide. Now I'm moving to the individual contracts. We looked at a contract that FAA had with a company called Fly Fofa Airways. During 2016, FAA entered into a dry lease agreement with Fly Fofa for the lease of second-hand cargo charters. In this regard, an irregular procurement process was followed. Then the approved value of the lease was 172 million rand per aircraft, and then the conditions of the contract were not adhered. Why are we saying the conditions? Fly Fofa had to own the contract in terms of the conditions of the lease. However, they only leased the aircraft from someone else. So for them, they leased the contract from someone else and then leased the aircraft to SAA. There was also a 3 months wet lease contract already in place between the two parties. This wet lease continued to be extended irregularly. One aircraft was grounded for a period of 8 months between 2018 and 2019. However, SAA continued to pay for the services. During July 2019, SAA extended the contract with Fly Fofa for another 36 months via an addendum, which is also a process that is irregular. We are now looking at setting aside, we've already appointed, as SIU, we've appointed a senior counsel, and the intention is to set this contract aside, and we are looking at a possible recovery of 300 million in this matter, and we also are preparing evidence for prosecution. The disciplinary at this stage, we do not have anyone who will be held responsible in terms of the disciplinary process because all the people that were involved, they left the employ of SAA. Next slide. And then the other aircraft contracts that we are looking at, they are at different stages. We are missing certain documents, and currently we are making use of documents that we imaged from a former employee of SAA. So, you know, for this reason, we are aiming at using the best available evidence that we can get. It appears that the appointment of one service provider was not in line with the civil aviation regulation. This is just like high level findings in terms of these five other matters that we are looking at. There's possible conflict of interest. The director of one company is a former employee of FAA, and one aircraft was paid but did not take a single flight. FAA accepted risk and rewards on aircraft in an operating lease. We are still in the process of compiling our evidence in this regard. So at this stage, our civil and criminal referral are still to be determined. Next slide. The maintenance and technical repair contracts. The allegations received by the SIU relate to 84 contracts procured by FAA, which contract it is alleged are beset of irregularities such as inflated pricing, fronting conflict of interest on the part of FAA staff, fictitious vendors, fictitious work orders, fictitious bank accounts, overpayment, non-delivery, non-performance, no value for money. The investigation process focuses on those areas that were that are part of our allegations. Next slide. Check. In terms of these contracts, we identified, and we are looking at contracts that some where we started was were at FAA during secondment, and this is one of those contracts. We are looking at a contract called Mashawonke, that was appointed to supply staff transport for the Cape Town, Johannesburg and East London station. And in terms of the process that was followed, there was a procurement process that was followed, but however, there were irregularities in the process. The company that tendered for the work that was awarded, it owned none of the vehicles that it submitted for the bid. And FAA didn't, the vehicles were actually owned by the company question. Then after the award, as a result of that, the company failed to deliver in terms of the contract. So then FAA had to then extend the original contract that had expired, and for that reason, it incurred fruitless and wasteful expenditure to the tune of 824,000. We are referring this contract also to the senior counsel. The senior counsel has been appointed to deal with this matter. So in total, there are seven matters that are currently referred to senior counsel for potential civil recovery. So in this regard, we want to set the contract aside, recover all the amounts that were paid by SAA to this company, and also recover this 824 that was paid, because it was an expense that was incurred by SAA as a failure, as a result of the failure from this company. At this juncture, we have not identified any evidence linking anyone to criminal except the misrepresentation by the company, which we are going to be referring. And in terms of disciplinary, then the officials that were involved in this are no longer the employee of SAA. Then the other one that we are involved with is the contract between SAA and McKenzie. Whilst we were busy with this investigation, we were then approached as already indicated that we are collaborating with the Zondo State Capture in terms of this investigation. We were contacted by State Capture Inquiry, and we were advised that McKenzie would like to settle a number of contracts with some of the institutions like SAA, Eskom, Transnet. And as a result of that, we got involved in the process. McKenzie had been awarded a contract by SAA. this contract included some kind of working capital contract where they had to advise SAA on issues that relate to it was mainly it was mainly to deal with organizational structure and alignment of management capabilities. Basically, that had to do with how then SAA could effectively manage certain aspects of its business. So the contract, the amount varied because the initial amount was a fixed cost of 3.7 million, but then tied to that was a service opportunities. That we looked at that and then we felt that, you know, it was very open to corruption because anybody could then say they were extremely beneficial to this, and then they would then Mackenzie would get the 7%, and then the other percentage that would get, it would be 7% of the 80% of the value of full value of the positive cash release. So, but this amount was then it was an amount that was locked to 80 million rand that Mackenzie had to be paid by SAA in excess of 12 million rand. And for this contract, Mackenzie then appointed Regiments as their strategic partner. So as a result of the evidence that were presented to them at the state capture inquiry, then Mackenzie offered to pay the entire contract value before appearing at the Zondo Commission. And that was last year. So the SIU is assisting SAA with these negotiations for settlements and agreement. On the other hand, as a consequence of the same contract, SAP lost in excess of 600 million in stock, which was declared obsolete by Mackenzie and Regiment. This matter was referred to NPA and AFU of their report of which was linked to the which was actually linked to the positive. There was a stock that was owned by SAT that was sale for next to nothing, and report was quantified for an expect, and then the cost was quantified that, you know, the loss was 600 million and AFU is dealing with that matter. We are looking at now, based on the settlement, we are looking at that 12 million rand contract, 12 million rand as a result of the settlement agreement. We've assisted the department, meaning the institution SAA. We, all of us, we are in the process, we are still negotiating because we are of the view that maybe it will be in the best interest of SAA to also recover interest on that total capital amount, because SAA paid Mackenzie from the funds that were borrowed. So they didn't have the funds, but based on the contract that they had, they borrowed funds to pay Mackenzie. So that interest is subject of now negotiation. So we are at that stage at the moment. The criminal referral, they are still being determined because we are still investigating the conduct of the employees from SAA as well as the conduct of Mackenzie and its strategic partner, which is Regiment. And the disciplinary referrals are also still to be determined. Next slide. Then the procurement of legal services. There were two allegations in this regard. There was one that the SIU received that one SAA board member was rendering legal services to SAA through his firm of attorneys. The other one was that one senior official of SAA failed to disclose his interest, and then he appointed a company, and he also appointed the same company for work despite the lack of experience in that area. Next slide. Our preliminary investigation, we prioritized the first one being the member that's currently in the SAA because that member was occupying a very senior position. So here we reviewed the legal services procurement contracts, and we reviewed two procurement contracts in particular. And we found that, you know, one senior official was conflicted in the appointment of certain legal firm, and we recommended the suspension of this official. We also gave the official a right of reply, and there are certain documents that he undertook to provide to the SIU, which we are still awaiting. At the moment, we have not referred any criminal referral, but we are going to be, because there is in the form of a business, the funds were paid to his business account. And even that business, he never declared that business to SAA. So we are looking into that. Four disciplinary months. Next slide. Then the FAA turnaround plan. This was a contract. That FAA had to advertise because they needed an urgent going. Okay, with the provider for business process management services and revenue assurance management. One was at 70 million and one was 100 million respectively. Next slide. So both contracts were awarded to one company, being Tata. This matter was not competitive. They did this procurement through an emergency process, and they appointed, so there were three companies that were selected, and they were given opportunities to quote, and two of the companies complained about the time considering the work that had to be done. However, this other contractor, this other service provider was ready. They submitted everything for both contracts, and then both contracts were awarded to this contractor. Then we found that the person who was dealing with this procurement was conflicted because he had relations with this company. However, he resigned from the employ of FAA. And what we have done in terms of this, during the secondment, we recommended the cancellation of this contract immediately, and it was implemented. FAA really cancelled this contract then, and they saved. Then we managed to save the institution 130 million rand, and we are now in the process of recovering the 78 million rand that was paid to this company. We have appointed a senior counsel in this regard, and I think he's busy reviewing our evidence, and then we will be able to give the court dates in due course. One criminal referral is under review, and we are hoping that it will be finalized by the end of this month. And there are four disciplinary referrals that we are currently packaging for SAA, which also we are anticipating that they will be done by end of this month. Next slide. Then there is another investigation, and this is maladministration. This is a simple abuse of travel rebates by members of the SAA. There were allegations that the members of SAA are selling this travel benefit for financial gain. So then this is a benefit that is given by SAA to qualifying person, and they are able to travel across the world at SAA's expense. This has been happening during the time, and now employees who could not travel, they will then sell the benefit to either family members or friends, and they will fly at SAA expense. Next slide. this in this regard, we our investigations are going are ongoing. We've identified at least we've identified at least 600 million that was linked to the loss that SAA incurred in terms of these matters. It's a question of trying to gather evidence to also establish whether the person, there are other matters where members have sold, but our investigation is ongoing in this regard. Next slide. I think, Chair, at this point, I will just skip this slide because the following slides, these are matters that we have not made any consequences. Jump to the next, to the slide. Next slide again, because here again, we have not done anything. Then I'm moving to the same slide, similar to the one that we were looking at Danielle. Chair, what we did in respect of SAA, we looked at the 3 years from 2015 to 2017, just to establish whether the company is doing well in terms of the financial performance. And as can be seen, the company has not been performing well. Operating costs are they exceed the income that SAA is making, and they have not made any profit for the 3 years that are under review. And in this, we are looking at trying to, again, similar to Danielle, to understand what were the root causes of all of these issues, what led to this the SAA situation, and we're hoping that by the end of our project, we'll be able to come up with some clear answers that we can present to the public on the causes of all the problems that SAA is facing. So on face value, you can see that the company has not been making any profit for the 3 years. It's actually also technically insolvent. Let's move to the next slide. Next slide again. So even the financial position, Chair, if you look at it, this displays a real constrained company in terms of finances. The financial position is in a dire situation. The assets, yes, they do have assets, but look at the liabilities. The far exceeds actually the double the assets. So in terms of liquidity, unfortunately, that's the situation at hand, and apparently this information is in the public space. Next slide. Next slide again. Chairperson, this investigation was only proclaimed last year during January and just before COVID and the restrictions that were imposed. So it's still in the early stages. We anticipate to finalize this entire investigation by 2022. But whilst we are investigating, we are looking at all the employees of SAA, the executive, the board members who left. We are actually working closer and monitoring the evidence that's being led at the commission. We're working closely with the commission in terms of the secretariat, in terms of getting whatever evidence that we need from that side. And we are hoping that by the end of this year, maybe an impact or maybe a report on just maladministration would be finalized. Next slide. The limitations, Chair, they are similar to the Danel one, because here we've got SAA personnel who are no longer working and some are disgruntled because of the termination of contracts. Some they just not want to cooperate. Some they do want to cooperate, but they are not available. Some they are overseas and all of that. That's the reality of the matter. Then the lack of original documents. It's a problem because they were using a round robin system of approving documents by SAA executives, especially and as well as the board members. Now, to secure certain documents is a nightmare. We've been to their storerooms. We were referred to the darkest places where documents could be found. We went there, and unfortunately, we are struggling. And if you look at the SAA, is also working on a skeleton staff. We are working through the Office of the Forensic, that forensic unit of SAA. And unfortunately, there's only one person there who's assisting us. And then sometimes we feel it's not gonna, it's not easy to retrieve documents when SAA staff is not even on site. So we are identifying officials that are responsible for document and record keeping, and we are looking at maybe a possible disciplinary referrals in those regards. And we are looking at the National Archives Act and the contraventions, therefore, thereafter then we are going to refer to the relevant institutions for disciplinary and other actions that are possible. I think that concludes my presentation, Chairperson. Thank you.
Right, head of unit.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Honorable Chair, this is really a classical example of what happens in a situation where matters has really been left to deteriorate to the extent where the business is grounded to a halt. The limitations that my colleague has presented are very real, and they're really contributing to the delay in the investigations. The state of SAA at the moment is really dire. We're dealing with business rescue practitioners on the one hand, but on the other hand, the law still says the accounting authority is the board. So in many instances, we've had to ensure that, we still deal with the board, but the business rescue practitioners also have their legal responsibilities, to make sure that they execute on their business rescue plan. This has really, presented, amongst others, a liaison issue with the SAA as an institution. As my colleague has indicated, many of the employees are likely to be laid off, and as a result, that has really cost. In an institution which is not facing a situation that SAA is facing, we would work, very closely with the SCM departments. Would work closely with other departments. But in this case, the airline is actually almost at a disintegration. So that really presents a serious problem. Be that as it may, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we have identified, and I've been engaging with the team, Although my colleague indicates that it's an ongoing investigation, yes, it's been proclaimed, you know, just over a year ago, factoring in COVID-19, the team drew up a project plan that indicates that the investigation will probably end somewhere in 2022, but we would like to fast track that. And that means that we need to provide more resources to Ms. Kasiba's team, just in the interest of ensuring that this is a situation, this is a company that has grounded to a halt and is probably disintegrating. So we need to determine as quickly as possible where we can recover or where we can really ensure that SAA claims back whatever has been lost from anyone. You'll see in most of the slides is that some of the outcomes are still to be determined. We will be allocating resources in terms of forensic accountants so that they can really count the numbers quickly there and determine what needs to be followed. What else I needed to just pick on? Thanks, Chair. I really wanted to, just augment on just the state of affairs of SAA and how is it that it's impacting on the investigation, but we're doing our best such that the investigation is not really disturbed such that we don't produce outcomes. Thank you very much.
Yo. Aye. The state capture, then the state collapse. This is a classic case of, well, why SAA became exactly what it is now. So right on, as number has been a very depressing presentation. You just leave one at a loss of words, actually. Right, Honorable Liz, you will be first off the bat. And Honorable Dirks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a very poor signal, which is very unusual for me. So forgive me if I break up. Chairman, there's not a hell of a lot we can say, except thank you for the investigations. And the sad thing is that very little of what's being said this evening is new. In fact, I'm not sure there's anything that's new. It's stuff that we've been raising for years and years. And even now, we're still pouring money into what Advocate Motibi describes as a disintegrating entity. It's very sad, and yet we carry on with it. That's even worse. Just on the question that Advocate Motibi makes the point, I think quite correctly, in terms of completing these investigations. I mean, the SAA staff as opposed to SAA technical. The majority of those staff have, except for the pilots, have accepted the severance package and will be gone and almost impossible to deal with in any comprehensive way. But what really worries me is there's clearly a whole lot of those people who are going to be paid massive severance packages who are actually part of the looting team. And I'm just wondering, we haven't been given any names this evening, and I understand that perhaps it's too early for that, but I do think that there's an urgency to identify the looters before they get paid out the millions that is involved in the VSP and probably already been paid. So I don't know how the SIU can speed that up, but Yeah, I don't know that anyone else is doing anything about it. I didn't pick up any investigation into the Dudu Mieni Airbus swap deal that was so controversial. And in the end, Cynthia Stimple lost her job because of it, because she whistleblew on it. Is that something that is part of the investigation? Chairman, it's just a mess and irrecoverable in our opinion. Thank you.
Yep, it is a mess. It's like a scrambled egg, trying to unscramble the scrambled egg. Can't tell the yolk from the white. All right, Honorable Dex, and then Honorable Hadebe, or Honorable Sommer, then Honorable Hadebe. Right in that order, your colleagues, and then the SIU will come in to respond.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair. Let me just put this here. Chairperson, it's really, Chair, it's really a sad state of affairs at SAA. I was going through the history of SAA and I came across a report for reporting tables in Parliament, where the DA is questioning and raising questions regarding the SAA to the then Minister of Public Enterprises or SAA Minister Hatebe, former Minister Hatebe. That was in 2001-2002, where these issues are being raised in Parliament. And as a report, members can go back and can go and research and find this report. And because it was already in a mess, it was in a deep crisis. And the minister's response was that, the minister was responding to a question by the DA, and the minister's response was that it is the DG that are creating the mess at ESCOM. His then DG in 2001-2002 is responsible. His words in his report is that the DG is responsible for the mess at the SAA. Then there's the whole Coleman saga where he takes our assets, freehold airbuses, he sells it off, and he then goes and leaves it back from the company he sold it to. And he had interest, he had a financial interest in that company. And then we give him 200 million rand, approved by Treasury, which some of our current ministers sitting as ministers in government was responsible for that when they were in finance, the other committees, authorizing the payment of 200 million rand as a golden handshake to Coleman. And no one is speaking about that. Now, if you want to deal with the rot in SAA, you have to go to the bottom of where it started and then clean this thing up out from the bottom. You must follow the evidence. Do not follow people when you do this investigation. I'm not for 1 minute saying that the SIU is following people. In fact, I'm very impressed with the SIU because they don't follow people. They follow evidence. And I was impressed with last week when Advocate TB made a presentation. They say no, they don't want to go on a fishing expedition, which I appreciated. Because I do not like investigators that goes on a fishing expedition. But when it comes to the issue of SAA, we really need to get to the bottom of it. And if we want to be honest with ourselves, and we want to deal with it, there's no use blaming certain people when days from the early days. This thing was falling apart. So I say I'm just mentioning these issues here because those crimes that was committed, those alleged crimes was committed those years, and no action was taken. Absolutely no action was taken. In fact, people are given a whole golden handshake, and nobody's interested in prosecuting them and going after them. Now I just have one issue that I want to raise here. It was raised by Honorable Lee. Now, the reason why I raised it because it's in the media there, and the media have a particular narrative about the previous chair of the board, Dudu Mieni. The particular narrative out in the media, about the chair of the board. Now, I know that the SIU don't do fishing expeditions. They're following evidence, not people. But there is that narrative out there about the former chair Tutu Mnyeni. Now, I may have missed it in the presentation, because at one stage I had to deal with some academic records from university. I had to try and get them, so which I need urgently tomorrow. So I may have lost it along the line in the presentation. I've heard once all in the presentation most of the referrals and investigations against officials that have been wrongdoing, recovering money from officials, referring of the officials. And then towards the end I heard only the mention of two board members involved in wrongdoing. So I basically have not heard about the board besides that one incident. But the chair of the board, which there's a particular narrative out there in the media about her. I haven't heard anything in the presentation about any wrongdoing on her part, or investigations against her, or findings against her, or referrals against her. So I may have missed that, but when I was still busy, but I've not heard it. So I just want, I'm not making an issue about it. I'm raising it because of the narrative out in the media. Because when you speak about SAA, people point fingers at Tutu Mnyeni. So I will just be of interest. I haven't heard anything that there's any wrongdoing from her, on her part, or any investigations or referrals against her in this report. If the SIU can just speak, just clarify that for us. But it's not a big issue. It's just the issue of the of interest because of the narrative out there. Thank you, Chairperson, very, very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Somya.
Honorable Chair, thank you so much. It's a very extensive report which covers a lot of things of the road, and it really comes to heart to how our institutions are somewhat behaving. Look into one thing that you have raised on the McKinley settlement, which is as a result of their own involvement and the payment in terms of the cost of 12 million rand. Then you go down in that slide, there's an indication of a costed loss of about 600 million rand, which would has been as a result of the outcomes of their own report, which has somewhat been discredited on the basis of their own appointment and the actual performance of that kind of work. And then you are talking about matters of interest into the amount as equal in terms of gain out of what has been paid to them. I don't know what is it that you could say and try to do in as far as a resultant loss, which has been a cause because of their own finding, leading to SAA acting wrongly in terms of such sale of their own capital infrastructure. And my view is that it might be of use to have a look into a totality of such transactions. And therefore the loss is beyond the 12 million rand. So in your proposition and getting involved in terms of finding that settlement, there's a causal loss which has been a consequence to the outcome of their own discredited piece of work if they commit to pay the entirety of the amount which they have been paid. I don't know what would be your view in that regard. But thanks for the report. It's really is a very extensive report which goes to heart as to why it has caused the collapse of such an institution, which I think if things are done quite correctly in both recoveries and as well the matters of following proper disciplinary measures, and even those who have been given the actual payments so that they should not be brought back into the employ of SAA when it's revived one way or the other. A belief which is there that you can't throw out a company which was founded on the basis of the state seeking to balance the flow of transportation as a public intervention in as far as effectiveness and looking into how the entirety of society interact effectively, making use of available means of transport and the state being involved in such encouragement. Thanks. Thank you very much, Chair.
All right. Thank you, Honorable Samuel. Honorable Hasebe.
Yeah, no. Thanks, Honorable Chair. In the report paint a very devastating state of affairs, a rotten business. Chair, what's more disturbing is that SAA is a national flag carrier. And listening to this and the impact it will have on the lives of the poor because of the greedy individual and service provider, it's very devastating, Chair. But I'm interested, Chair, in knowing this service provider, when cases of fraud and corruption are uncovered, they are quickly willing to repay the money. Whether or not after they have done so, is that the end of the case? Does it become business as usual for them? They continue to look around for another cash cow that they're going to milk? Are we not sending a very strong and unequivocal message to those who are found guilty? Or are we satisfied with the fact that after they have we have uncovered the corruption as led by the SIU, we are willing to settle with them and then they pay the money? Because I don't want a situation or a picture that will be painted that when it comes to crime, fraud and corruption, it is only suitable for the rich and wealthy. They will be able to buy their way out and nothing will happen after they have repaid the money. I'm sure that's not the intent or the intention of all this investigation, because we need to send a very strong message. And for anyone who might have the intention of going into or venture into crime and corruption, that person might think twice. Otherwise, if we're going to let the situation where a person will just repay the money, yeah, that person can continue, even if it means we prohibit them from doing business with the state anymore, even though they've paid the money, that will send a clear message. So I would like to get that understanding, Chair, from the SIU in terms of their findings, whether or not it only goes as far as paying back the money. Thank you. Chairman, the Kabir. Chairperson.
Hey. I think they had a break.
On his behalf, can I then assist?
I think.
Who is our next speaker? Our next speaker.
My network is giving me a problem.
I'm fine now, Chair.
I think so. I'm back, but just to understand by to assist.
Okay.
Who was next in the group?
No, I think
this is the last speaker. So can we hand over to...
No, Chair. No.
Oh, Mom.
Chair.
All right, Chris.
Thank you very much.
My long way.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, once again, I really want to congratulate the SIU with the kind of work that they are doing and the knowledge of the space chair. I am really impressed. I really want to say it again that they are our last hope because South Africa has been very, very notorious, especially our government, insofar as corruption is concerned. They are really now the last line in defending our poor people in the looting that has been taking place in them. Yes. Chair, my take here is whether it is possible to work with the business rescue plan people as Advocate Mutibi is reporting to say there's a lot of competition in that space. And mine is, my take is, the government is also responsible for these business rescue plans. Isn't there any way where they can plan together such that the SIU is not being overtaken by events? For instance, like Honorable Liz was saying, there's going to be a process of paying people their money whilst there are investigations that are taking place. How can we really make sure that for all those that might be expected to pay back, working together with the SIU and the business rescue plan, how can they find a middle ground so that we don't have that Honorable Liz was raising to be a very, very serious fear that people might move away and we might not be able to get that money in years' time or so, because they'll make it a point that we don't get it back anyway. So is there a way that we can work together such that you the SIU is not being really left behind insofar as recouping of the money is that were looted by the looters, Chair. I think we are very consistent to say they must do their work as they are doing. And if we can, I heard them saying the some investigation in the earlier SOEs that we're dealing with, they said by June they were concluded those. I did not hear them on what they anticipate insofar as the SAA is concerned. Can we also get that, Chair? Because for where we are, the sooner they conclude, the better, so that everybody can see that, in fact, we're doing something about corruption, especially for those who have been mentioned. The investigation is finding out that indeed they are on the wrong. So that's my take, Chair, just to be made very clear whether there can be no way of working together. I know they have different interests, but this is one government that wants to deal with corruption. So there shouldn't be any competition. Instead, there should be a way of working together. Forgive me if I am talking from ignorance, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
No ignorance at all, actually. I think your question is quite substantive and I want to build on it. But I should say maybe the SIU, the HOU will give an indication here. Just on what Honorable Liz and what Mamdullah Shev raised, excuse me, and to say maybe an approach similar to that on the PPE investigation, to have the report released in tranches or phases so that we don't wait for a full, a report in 2022, because also you see the challenges that we are chasing a moving target of a business that is
in the hands of business rescue practitioners, which may, you know, take a different form, a different shape, as things are still not very clear now in terms of its direction. And so these things must not be lost in the cracks. I think that's the dilemma, that we're investigating an entity which is morphing in one way or the other, and also because of complexities that are unprecedented, really. And so I think Mam Tolashe and what Wablis are raising is fundamental to ensure that this is not an exercise in futility, but one must actually, you know, derive the necessary results out of it for it to be meaningful. So maybe HOU, something along the lines of the similar model, but you will let us know of your modalities, whether today or whether you'll rework them out, so that we can calibrate our approaches with an oversight consistent to how you'll be structuring all these things. Just one question on my side. I think insofar as the denial and the SA investigations are concerned, how much is all of this costing you to do, or how much have you budgeted for it, and whether you've got the resources necessary and required to actually pursue this mammoth task? But honorable colleagues, I think that was the last question from Mam Tolashe. Can I then get a response? Can you get responses then from the SIU, HOU, and your team? Over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. We appreciate the questions. Just in terms of the approach, Chair, if I were to start there, on releasing interim reports, I think that's especially adopt that approach. That approach can be adopted in any investigation. There are no limitations. It's not only applicable to COVID-19 investigation. So that as an approach, especially in the circumstances, we should do that. That's also good, and I really want to agree with the fact that this should not be an exercise in futility. We would like to see it producing the results that we had set ourselves out to produce. So in line with that, Honorable Chair and Honorable Tolashe, what we will do, although we've of course been liaising with the business rescue practitioners, and also in line with what Honorable Lees is saying, around those employees who might leave and they would possibly have been part of the wrongdoing. So what we should do, and we will do that, is that yes, indeed, we've got, you know, some names where evidence has pointed, and in that case, we should immediately indicate to the business practitioners and to the board, in the sense that we should know what is it that each individual has done, and what is it that we are likely to produce. Because in the same way as we do with those employees who resign in the face of wrongdoing, and we approach the courts to freeze the pensions, I do not think that there is any legal impediment that says anyone who is about to be paid a severance package, we cannot seek legal intervention to ensure that we hold that in the interest of ensuring that when we come to recover, we should be able to recover. We will explore that with immediate effect. My colleague, the lead investigators, and my colleague in the legal space we need to immediately do that, and we'll include it in the report, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Honorable Liz, I'll leave this to my colleague, Mrs. Tasibe, if you do have the information. If not, then we can possibly respond to the committee in writing. This issue around the Airbus swap, where the former chairperson was involved, or allegedly was involved, if you do have information on that, please appraise the Honorable Committee. But as I say, if we don't have it on hand, then we can respond in writing to the committee. Honorable Dex, I cannot agree with you more. I agree with you 100% that the observation really is that I think there were indicators long time ago. I mean, as in the years that you're referring, 2001. The unfortunate part is that perhaps those indicators were not responded to appropriately or accordingly. So as a result, we're having to now dive deep and investigate as we are doing now. The timeline for our investigation does not really extend back to 2001. We can really indicate that, Mr. Sibe, if you do have the timelines that our investigation covers. Again, Honorable Dex, with regard to the former chairperson, what we do and we will do, as we do in other SOE investigations, in all of these wrongdoings, the investigators have a clear directive that we should determine which board was in place at a certain period when the wrongdoings identified occurred, and what was the role of the board at the time. And if at any point in time the board that was chaired by the former chairperson is identified to have been recalcitrant, we will make sure that they are also held accountable. Honorable Somio, Mackenzie settlement, I think I'll also touch on what Honorable Hadebe has said. It is indeed so that we have to guard against sort of sending a wrong message, that when companies are faced with wrongdoing, evidence of fraud and corruption, that they easily, you know, come out and offer to settle. So the approach that we adopt in those instances, similar to what we did at Eskom when ABB settled for 1.5 billion, the underlying message and the underlying or the qualification to the settlement agreement is that if there is any evidence, of course the settlement agreement we cannot agree that anybody is held not to account when there's criminal evidence. So the underlying qualification is when there's evidence of criminality, that company will be prosecuted. So if they don't like that, then they better not settle. But we will continue then with the civil litigation and get to the same result. Because the settlement just helps. And Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, the settlement, like my colleague Mr. Sibe said, the negotiations are still going on. There was an issue around the payment of the capital amount, but there's also this issue around interest that they seemingly wanted to avoid or escape from. And we are saying to SAA and to this company McKinsey that if you settle, you've got to settle the whole amount, including interest. that will be in the interest of SAA. So when we do these settlements, we ensure that they are in the interest of SAA. But as I say, the qualification to that is that if there's evidence pointing to criminal action, the company and its directors will be prosecuted. They should not, agreeably, I agree, Honorable Khadebe, they should not buy their way out. We should not send out that message. Honorable Tolashe, we take the message to heart, and we will, of course, do our best that we do our investigations as effectively as possible, so that we sustain that hope and in fact realize it in the sense of ensuring that our investigations, you know, bring out the anticipated results, hold those who are responsible to account, and the result must be tangible and demonstrable. So in this environment of SAA, I think speed is of the essence. Time is of the essence at the moment. We have to go and meet with the business rescue practitioners and the board to determine that all of those who have been pointed out do not get away with their severance packages without being held to account. Chair, I would like to pause here. In terms of cost of the investigation, Mr. Sibe or my colleague, Mr. Lefeto, if you have the project plan what we call the letter of engagement, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, the letter of engagement is what we enter into and sign up with the state institution, and that letter indicates the resources that we need and the costs of the investigation. My colleagues, Mr. Lakhato and Mr. Sibe, if you have, please indicate to the Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members. If not, then we should be able to respond quite quickly in writing back to the committee. Mr. Sibe, are you able to just indicate on Honorable Lee's question around the Airbus shop? Is it in the scope of the investigation? Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll just allow Mr. Sibe to come in.
Thank you, HOU, and thank you, Chairperson. Let me start with the period of our proclamation. Our proclamation period is from the 1st of January 2002 to 31st January 2020. That's in essence almost 18 years, Chairperson, that we are looking at in terms of SAA. And then let me also attend to the issue of budget. We've signed a letter of engagement with both Danel and SAA. For Danel, the investigation, we anticipated that it will cost us 10 million rand, and we have not yet finished that budget. We're still in line with our budget. And then SAA, considering the time, the period of our investigation, that our investigation is covering, we budgeted for 30.5 million rand in respect of SAA. This is just a budget. We may exceed or we may just fall short of this amount. And then the around the question, I think it was, when are we finishing? Chairperson, I think will welcome the suggestion that we approach, as the HOE, as the head has already indicated. We've got matters that will be finishing in due course. Those matters, I think then we will be ready to report on them as and when we finish. And then on the issue of the Airbus SOC, Chairperson, I would like to report that, you know, our investigation into SAA is too broad. It's similar to the investigation into ESCOM. It's very wide. In terms of the Airbuses and Airbus contracts and all processes relating to aircraft, we are reviewing 79 contracts in total. And then because it's 44 contracts with individual companies, but you know the number of aircraft that we are reviewing is 79, and that excludes the contracts, the specific contracts for maintenance and repairs for all the aircraft that we are currently reviewing. So our investigation is very broad in terms of FAA. So to be specific to the question, we are investigating the swap deal. So nothing that is in that space will not be covered, Chairperson. Hence my introduction to, I started with giving a background on the sale and leaseback of these aircraft. And also we are looking into now expanding our scope into everything that dealt with the aircraft. The issue around identifying the looters, we have already identified a number of employees, Chair, as per my report, that were involved in some of these contracts. And we have we've got a list of those. And what we will do then, based on the guidance that was given, we will be able to now start engaging with FAA and the business rescue practitioners around that, so that at least they know that we might have to apply for the freezing of those pensions. And then the sale and leaseback, the 200 million that was paid and authorized by National Treasury, that's why we started with the whole process, what led to the decision to sell all the fleet of SAA and start leasing back. So we are reviewing that process and we are going to get a report on that. We cannot therefore at this stage say that somebody is responsible. I know that you mentioned the chairperson, but what we have established at the moment is that the board at all material times was divided in a number of issues. So we have requested the personal files. We are in the process now of interviewing all the board members that were involved in some of these decisions, because based on the BAC documents as well as then the recordings that we have, that we managed to get, they were not in agreement in all the issues, and then we want to follow that up, and then if we find some to be liable, then we will follow that process, Chair. And then with regards to the McKinsey contract, yes, there is that 600 million that is linked to that contract, but because that matter is already with AFU, we also brought AFU on board at one stage with these settlement negotiations. And the feeling was that maybe we should allow the law to take its course in terms of that. What we have done, that's why the SIU is involved in that settlement agreement. We have advised SAA and we are all in agreement that there is no way that this settlement agreement will exonerate them from any criminal liability and from any future civil liability. So in essence, they're wanting to pay the 10.5 million excluding VAT. That is not clearing them from any future liability. That includes the criminal liability if we find any criminality against them. Hence, in my presentation, Chairperson, I indicated that we are still investigating even the payments to McKinsey, what led to that payment, because it was linked to the performance. So if it was linked to their performance, then you might find that one member was not honest in approving certain payments. So we are looking into that. So that investigation is not yet finalized. So we've agreed, we've taken a conscious stand that the SIU will not be part of that settlement agreement. Even though we've assisted SAA, we are not going to be part of the signing of that agreement because we would like to remain independent in the process. And having advised SAA not to exonerate McKenzie from any wrongdoing. So we are not going to be party to the agreement. Yes, it is possible to work with the business rescue practitioners around some of these instances and also identify the liable officials. I think that's about it, Chairperson. I'm not sure whether I'm leaving anything.
Right, colleagues, I think, all right, Honorable Dex, I saw your hand is up, a brief one, and then we will bring it to a
Just very brief. Yeah, just very briefly, Chair, yeah, I'm very happy that the period covers from 2002, because that's a critical period. I'm very grateful for that. However, I must say the task will be very daunting, and I do not know if the SIU will have the resources because there's so many other investigations and other SOEs. And this one in SAA will be daunting in itself. So I'm very, very glad that this from 2002 was, it will cover the time where the CEO, the then CEO sold our fleet to a company overseas where he had an interest, financial interest in, where he was a director of. And then we still gave him a golden handshake. So we'll deal with it that, Honorable Dirk asked what happened to Mnyeni. I don't want the media to misquote me. I did not go say, no, that's not what the media have done. Because the media, when you speak about SAA and corruption SAA, everybody in this country will tell you to Mnyeni is the corruption at SAA. That narrative was created by the media. Now I'm not a supporter of that kind of narrative, but the narrative is out there. And then when we get reports that officials, this official, that official, has been wrongly. So I was just asking the issue about Mnyeni. I'm not saying that she's guilty, I'm not saying that she has been involved in corruption. I raise it because of the narrative that has been created by the media out there. But there's no way that I'm suggesting that we... Our focus must be to Mnyeni. Must go after to Mnyeni. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just asking it because of the narrative out there. Thank you, Jay.
No, I think you have explained yourself sufficiently on that one, and I think it suffices for yourself.
Thank you.
Let me meet the head of UNIT of.
Wow. Yes,
are you? And Mam Kesebe and the rest of the team, as always, we appreciate the cooperation that we do. And I'm hopeful that HOU will be able to consider more practically within the schedule of work that you have the issue of the interim reports. As sharply raised by Mam Tolashe and Babu Liz, as a safeguard mechanism to make sure that we derive maximum output in terms of the investigation. So, colleagues, as you can see, there's a lot of work that the SIU has on their hands. These two investigations. It will cost about 40 million. And that is the tragedy of corruption, that it costs money to recover money, to go after money, to go after people. Money that could be spent on improving the collective sustainable livelihoods of our people. And so it's a vicious cycle, which we need to nip in the bud in one way or the other. And
So such as these become our last hope, and so we hope that they will be done correctly and that they will yield the necessary results. So HOU and your team, you've of course painted the picture as it is, as bleak as it is. As I was saying, there's state capture, then there's state collapse. I mean, Denel and SAA were flagships in their respective sectors and spaces. Today, they are shadows of their former selves. And it's heartbreaking to see them breaking like this and broken like this. So thank you very much for that. Colleagues, just one announcement. I will certainly not be mean and keep up here any longer. I did have a discussion with the legal advisor assigned to our committee, and I can only just conclude to say we can proceed with the inquiry as we discussed this morning, along the lines that we have discussed. I think what we will do is just send a briefing note to members and find an opportunity maybe next week, Tuesday or Wednesday, for about 30 minutes for the legal advisor to just come and talk to us on the basis of the briefing note that we had. But from their side, we've got a green light, including but not limited to meeting and calling Mr. Chichangano, the suspended CPO of Eskom, and of course merging really the work of the deviations and expansions to the litany of allegations that are there. So those two can run together and can be worked on together. And what we will be doing is, if there's a need for additional resources for the committee, when we worked out the modalities of this exercise, we will make an application to the presiding officers of Parliament. But I think it forms part and parcel of our normal work. It's just that we must deal with it speedily so that we can at Eskom and move past these issues, which really must not derail us from the broader mission of an effective and functional Eskom, and as its members expressed themselves. But be that as it may, this investigation, I'm fundamentally convinced, will go a long way in assisting us to fix things at Eskom. It may unearth other things. So I think, colleagues, what we'll do, because really it's been a long day, we will send a briefing note tomorrow, and then have the legal advisor, which we put Ben, either Tuesday morning or Wednesday morning, for 30 minutes just to speak to the members, and then on the basis of that briefing note, they can already start drafting on it so that we can just move with this. So colleagues, all in all, the green light in terms of advice has been given, and it should be all systems go once we have adopted the modus operandi and the framework of the investigation. So I hope, can we leave it at that, and to say that Parliament Legal is now aware of this, and we are working with them on this matter, given the complexities which characterize it. Colleagues, may we leave it at that?
That's fine.
Yes, Chair, we are ready for Eskom. You are ready.
Yes. Going once, going twice, going thrice,
Chair. Is it fine? Let's appreciate that we have two women who are presenting these reports. For the previous period, it has been our advocate. Now has got two women.
This is a wonderful night.
We must really just appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you.
No, sir. Babu Mtibi, we may be calling on you to assist us with the investigation. So just keep an ear out, depending what it births. We're dealing with an Eskom matter, which will require us to move with agency. Colleagues, going one.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, good night.
Good night.
See you.
Bye, long live.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
I receive.
Yay!
Good night.
Bye.